Hello and welcome to the English edition of Nachgehackt. My name is Henrike Tönnes and I'm here to talk to cybersecurity experts. And I'll make sure everyone understands. All systems ready? Then let's get started. Sometimes our efforts to protect our data really does feel like the literal fight against windmills. Network failures are inevitable and system resilience against attacks is hard to maintain. For each domain, there will be multiple strong enemies to overcome if we want our data to be safe. But my guest today has taken on the fight against those cyber windmills, and just like Don Quixote, who already said, don't put all your eggs in one basket, is researching on the approach of decentralized security. Ghassan Karami is here with me today. He's a professor of computer science at Ruhr University Bochum and leads the chair of information security. He is part of the cluster of Excellence CASA, member of the Horst Goetz Institute for IT Security, and a part-time chief scientific advisor at NEC Labs Europe. He contributed to more than 100 currently granted patents and is interested in all aspects of security and privacy with a focus on decentralized security, which he will give us some insights into. Welcome, Ghassan. Nice to have you here.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited about this.
Yes, I'm really excited too to learn quite a lot. Before I can, as we already let you in, we always have these three questions that we ask of our guests.
Sure.
So are you ready?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, the first one is, what do you use your computer for most often?
I use it most often to work.
Okay, and at work for what?
So kind of mostly LaTeX, kind of writing research papers. That's probably the biggest use of my laptop, no? Probably the second biggest use is writing and sending or replying to emails.
Okay. How many on average a day?
Unfortunately, I cannot count anymore. No, it's too much, to be honest.
Yeah, okay. It's too much. And privately, what do you use the computer for? Do you even?
No, I don't. No, I don't. So we have a smart TV.
Yeah.
So it's basically everything there. I try to stay away from my computer at home. Yeah. Otherwise, it feels I cannot stop from working.
Yeah, understandably so. Yeah. Right. What is the first association that you have when you hear the term IT security?
Yeah, I mean, first association is basically the entire possible spectrum of security solutions. For me, it's how to defend citizens, how to defend society, how to protect the citizens' privacies and confidentiality of data. It's mostly defensive for me.
Okay.
I'm mostly on the defense side. I'm part of the good crowd of people.
It ties in with my third question. Have you ever been hacked?
Yeah, unfortunately.
And what was that? What incident?
Yeah, I mean, I hate to admit it, no? Being kind of being a professor for IT security.
Everybody does, don't worry.
Yeah. No, it was really kind of an unfortunate coincidence. I even kind of told the same story to my class in because I teach system security here in Rube. That even the experts sometimes they fall for these tricks.
Of
no? Typically, kind of in security, the one of the weakest links is when the user is not paying attention, because most solutions require you as a user to do something active, mm-hmm. not to click a button, to recognize that this is fake or not, to know that this is a spam email, to know that this is a phishing email. No. And I was at the airport, I was flying back to Bochum, was attending a conference, a security conference, fortunately. Yeah. And it was just 2 seconds before, or maybe 2 minutes before I passed security check. And I got an SMS saying, you need to update your banking password. And then, you know, it was the end of the day, I was super tired. Lots of things going back privately at home. I could not focus and realize, oh, this is something wrong. So I actually went ahead and updated. The look and feel were super close, no, to what my bank looks like. Amazing. But there was no functionality. I could detect one step before entering my actual PIN that there's something wrong, and I didn't. Okay. But it was really a few seconds before I lost my bank account.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was okay. Terrible.
What made you recognize last second that it was a fake?
I'm trying to remember, but so it was definitely not the look and feel. They did an excellent job there. I think it was a technicality.
Okay.
In the sense that they were using, it was still HTTPS, it was still a secure kind of encrypted content that was sent from the user side. I think I felt that some input I was doing was not, kind of, there was no relation between input and output. They could not check, for instance, that my username is correct.
Ah, okay.
And I noticed that it cannot be my username because I was so tired anyway. This is where I stopped completely.
Okay.
Really, really fortunate.
So that was just the feeling that something was off and you can't put your finger on it.
I hate to admit this. Really, I hate to admit this.
Well, but that's
no. But this is a big lesson, I think. Kind of, if us who teach about this, who preach about this, sometimes fall short for it, then it's really a tough game for average users.
It actually makes me feel better now that you tell me that story.
Don't feel bad.
Because it's like, wow, if he can't detect it immediately, then how am I supposed to?
I think kind of most users can detect this in an ideal environment. And now that's the issue. What is an ideal environment for us? I mean, we're all parents, we all have kids, the kids would yell and shout, and then you have to do your job, you have to quickly put them to school. All of these are situations that add to your stress level, and then your conduct as a user is not ideal.
Yeah.
And this is exactly the window of opportunity for your adversary.
Yeah.
And I fell short for it. Probably others would too.
Yeah, obviously.
I'm not very proud of that.
Well, it's also nothing to be ashamed of, I think. Before we go into the topic that we have today, maybe something that is very interesting for all of our listeners is, can you put your finger on, okay, these are the things that you can specifically look for in these situations in order not to fall for it?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if this is an exhaustive list, but I think first and most foremost is to check that the domain name is correct.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if it's a banking thing, so if there's Deutsche Bank there, then it's important to see the Deutsche Bank actual domain.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to make sure this is HTTPS. Kind of, it's kind of something that when you send information, it's encrypted. Typically, kind of lame attacks do not go that high to have a certificate, to have a proper authentication with SSL. Now, these guys pulled it through. The next thing to do is to check the look and feel, if it truly looks like your banking app. It did, unfortunately, at this stage. Now I remember actually what fell short. I'm not a native German speaker, but there was some mistake in German.
Ah, okay.
Typos. Yeah. Your bank would not do this. They have professionals doing this. So maybe check also how the pronunciation is,
the
grammar is. And again, this is very hard if you're not native speaker.
Yeah.
So try to switch the language. And I think that's another cue. There was no English, which is unusual for a German bank.
Absolutely.
So yeah, there were some cues. No, again, it depends on your level of stress and tiredness. No,
and awareness.
And awareness, of course. But no, there are. I think typically it's not that hard in an ideal environment to depict. No, just to summarize, domain name, that it's an HTTPS request. This is something you can see by checking the link. HTTPS is very important.
Mm-hmm.
Your browser would recognize that the certificate is fine then. Otherwise, it would give you a warning. And if you get a warning, you should stop. Of course, double check that this is the right bank, that this is the right look and feel. Read before you input. I didn't do that. No. And then I think it's inevitable that we make mistakes as users. We should not blame ourselves too much. First thing I've done, obviously, I did not give in my password, but still I called my bank.
Yeah.
And I told them, please stop online transactions until I fly back home and I manage to understand what has happened.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I was quite proud of the operator. It was a funny situation because I had to explain that
what happened.
I do that for a living, and then, and that he was telling me stuff like, yeah, I know. And then he was like, then why did you do this? I'm like, I don't know. It was very funny, no? But really, very embarrassing. But the guy was super, super well educated and competent, and I was stunned because I didn't expect this.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. That's cool. It's also an interesting situation when they have to go out of their routine and say, wow, I have an expert there and he still did it.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
No, but still, reaction is very important.
Yeah.
You're going to make mistakes. It's fine. It's inevitable. When you do make mistakes, you need to correct.
Yeah.
And that's the most important part.
Yeah. And then, especially with this banking, you call the bank, you say to them, okay, this happened. Can you please help me? And then they will obviously also support you.
Yeah. Directly, yeah.
Yeah.
They know what to do.
Yeah. And they are used to these efforts, I think.
They're used to this. It was the first of a kind attack. And then they had to, because of me, I actually documented it and whatever. They sent mass emails showing the looks and feel, whatever. Yeah. Apparently 320 users in Germany fell for it and lost their complete bank accounts.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What a success for the hackers in that case. All right. So I already, in the introduction, I already said decentralized security kind of is the topic generally. What are you mainly interested in your research right now?
Super. Yeah. So kind of what I do is I try to understand the security provisions. So what is the security advantage and what are the disadvantages of having largely replicated distributed systems.
Mm-hmm.
No? And the idea here is that instead of you relying only on, I know, Amazon as your single provider or on a single provider for logging in, that provider might crash, that provider might be hacked, that provider might be compromised. You, exactly like you said, distribute your eggs in multiple baskets.
Mm-hmm.
You rely on a multitude of them being correct, and you can tolerate some of them being incorrect
mm-hmm.
to still achieve your task.
Okay.
That's decentralized security at the end. And so what I do is I try to understand to which extent we can benefit from decentralizing.
Mm-hmm.
What are the pitfalls? What are things to avoid? No, one of our latest results was fundamental, I think, in that perspective, because it showed, and I would say this is kind of against common belief, that the more you distribute, sometimes the more you lose security. So yes, you should distribute your eggs, but if you distribute too much eggs around, you end up losing some security.
Okay.
That was the last result we had maybe a few months ago.
Okay. How did you come to research on exactly this phenomenon? I mean, that must have been a reason.
Right. So, I mean, for me, I was actually did my PhD in standard system security. No, I mean, I was mostly involved in kind of how do you check that computations or storage you outsource to the cloud, like Google or Amazon, is correct.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2009, Bitcoin came about.
Ah.
And it was almost towards the end of my PhD. I had lots of free time. I was in ETH Zurich, lots of funding. So we said, oh, let's look into this.
Mm-hmm.
And Bitcoin was, in fact, the most widely adopted, largely distributed, largely replicated platform we've ever witnessed in history.
Mm-hmm.
Before Bitcoin, probably the most replicated distributed system that existed probably was replicated across a handful of nodes. Now suddenly you have a structure that's open for research with public data sets. It's a dream for a researcher.
Yeah.
That's replicated across hundreds of thousands of nodes.
Yeah.
And it actually survived the test of time. We've been talking about Bitcoin since 2009.
Yes.
I personally did not expect Bitcoin to continue.
Mm-hmm.
I gave so many talks, and I always would start by saying, I don't think it will be Bitcoin next year.
Yeah.
I was proven wrong all this time. and today it's the biggest, most distributed platform that exists, that has withstood the test of time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's fascinating. And now Bitcoin is actually fueling innovation in the field.
Mm-hmm.
Bitcoin started as a way to replace your bank, a single bank,
yes,
with many nodes doing the same computations for your balance. So instead of you relying on your bank to tell you what's your balance or to keep your coin, you rely on many nodes in the world to do that for you.
Yeah.
Many saw that to be good in the sense that you don't have a single vendor login. You don't rely only on your bank.
Yeah.
There are no hidden fees anymore.
Mm-hmm.
If your bank decides to censor you,
yeah,
then in a distributed setting, it cannot happen. And this has fueled innovation because now we're talking about distributed learning.
Mm-hmm.
This is now in cars, for the learning is in cars. We're talking about distributing YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
There is a distributed platform for YouTube. Mastodon, the alternative for Twitter or mm-hmm. X, is actually federated or distributed. We're seeing distributed platforms and applications popping up in almost every aspect of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Autonomous driving is actually distributed driving.
Yeah.
Or distributed computing. So yeah, I think it's going to be inevitable in every part of our lives. And I think it has a lot of potential for security.
Yeah. You already said many saw this as something good. That kind of gives me the hint that you would differentiate a little bit between the possibilities and the pitfalls. Is that
right? Yeah. I mean, the issue is with the and that's actually an excellent question, because the issue with distributed systems is technology-wise, you can distribute your eggs in multiple baskets.
Yeah.
And that may be, if you have a proper algorithm that you study well, that you research well, that researchers have had time to analyze, then maybe that's a very good thing. But simply taking ad hoc solutions for distribution and deploying them and then hooking up millions of users with mm-hmm. their life savings
mm-hmm.
without proper guarantees on what's happening, I'm not sure that's great. Now, some people would not like this, but unfortunately, I think this is reality. The biggest problem here is governance.
Okay.
When you have a bank, there are regulations that tell you, in case you got hacked, what do you do?
Yeah.
The government would put a limit of liability on the bank or on you. When you do things distributed in the world, who's liable and who is responsible for what?
Mm-hmm.
That's super important. And currently, we have technology for distributed systems, but we don't have analogous methods to ensure this distributed or decentralized governance. Mm-hmm. And I think you cannot do one without the other.
Okay. So is that something that you are looking to develop or to implement somehow?
Right. And that's the beauty of being in Bochum. Because I am fairly kind of a technical PI. I kind of do technology mostly. And I need to collaborate with lots of experts here in Bochum that do kind of more of regulatory compliance and some of these societal issues to see how we can effectively come up with measures that achieve decentralized governance.
Yeah.
So this is a fairly interdisciplinary collaboration
mm-hmm.
and it's exciting for Bochum to have, because it's true that we need to look at this from different angles. There is the regulatory side, there is societal side, there is technical side. Yeah?
Yeah,
and without doing this from all angles, you cannot deploy this.
Yeah. What's your favorite angle at the moment to look at?
I'm a technical guy.
Yeah.
No, so, I mean, it means for me, I only understand technology, obviously, no?
Okay.
But I understand very well that technology alone does not mean societal impact.
Okay, so the digital society needs to be developed as well and looked into as well.
Yeah, you need to understand what is the impact of this technology in deployment time on users, no?
Yeah.
On citizens.
Yeah. So what are the biggest pitfalls, could you say that?
Of
developing this or of trying to implement this to actually reach this governance thing and to, you know.
I understand. I mean, I think here it's kind of a really hard problem.
Okay.
Because in centralized solution, there is a central provider.
Yeah.
It's obvious who is to blame.
Yeah.
It's obvious who to regulate. It's obvious who to blame. And then even if it's obvious, we're still struggling till now how to do this properly. Now take this problem and then multiply this by, I don't know, the number of nodes that exist, and it's really unclear where liability holds. Is it about who provides the software?
Mm-hmm.
Is it about who runs and deploys the nodes? Is it about who uses the systems? Is it about the geographical territory where the nodes are? If you have a system that's distributed between Germany and the US and Japan,
mm-hmm.
under which regulation does it fall?
Yeah.
It's super convoluted and it's not very easy at all. It's very challenging.
Yeah. Have you had solutions or part solutions already? I mean, for example, for this problem that you're just
for governance, you mean?
Yeah.
I don't think I think kind of till now we're still too much, at least given also what I know, we're still too much on the technical, on technology side.
Okay.
Because there's still lots of obstacles to overcome technologically.
Yeah. Okay.
And I don't think technology is super mature now for large scale deployment between Japan, Germany, and the US at large scale, to be honest.
Yeah.
And that's why probably we still have some time before we get to actual regulations and whatever. You should not regulate something that's not too mature. Because
yeah,
you end
true.
Up regulating something is different from what's going to be deployed.
Yeah, absolutely. What are the obstacles that you're facing at the moment?
I think kind of one of the biggest challenges in developing secure decentralized systems is ensuring security while at the same time allowing them to scale.
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy to do one or the other. So, I mean, I can secure a system by making it centralized. I know how to do that. We, as researchers, know how to do that. The moment that you distribute to hundreds of millions of nodes, there are lots of complexities that come from concurrency theory or consensus protocols or the interdependencies between layer, network, consensus, software, and smart contracts that make this super hard to actually do. And we're still struggling to completely understand if what we have now is enough,
mm-hmm.
if there will be future attacks on this. We still don't have a proper definition of what decentralized security is.
Okay. And then, I mean, the next step would be, okay, how do you make this applicable for everyone and also safe or secure to use then for everyone, right?
Right. I mean, it always starts with research, in my view. No, of course, this is a biased opinion. We should always study the problem, give enough time for researchers to understand, analyze the problem from different angles.
Mm-hmm.
Once we are sure that this thing works, then we need to try to look at deployment aspects. And there we need to see usability. Is it usable?
Mm-hmm.
Would an expert like me fall short in getting hacked there or not? And it turns out that these things are actually require lots of usability aspects. There are lots of problems that in system security we thought we have solved before.
Mm-hmm.
Now they pop up and we still need to solve them again.
Yes.
And then there is the regulation aspects of things, like the one we discussed, kind of who deploys it, who's liable, who's governing it, who do you regulate in the first place, and so on and so forth.
I can imagine that's also a political thing, right? Then highly political, like pushing things, that's not our fault, that's their resort.
That's I think, the regulatory landscape typically. Now, I think kind of the European Union has been pushing a lot of funding into innovation and to research in these topics. Mm-hmm. I think the EU had also the ambition of having this thing that we call central bank digital currency. Mm-hmm. So it kind of like a digital currency that's kind of distributed across all member states without the ECB, the European Central Bank, being a central focal player.
Yeah.
Somewhat like this. And they were looking at blockchains or distributed systems mm-hmm. as part of technology provider for this. No? Yeah, so let's see. There is something called Web3. I don't know if you've heard about it.
I haven't, so maybe we can just quickly also explain that to our listeners.
Yeah, so kind of, to be honest, I don't think anybody precisely knows what Web3 is till today. I think kind of the idea is currently kind of the storyline that I know of. I'm not really pushing for this in any way, so I don't have any agenda there. I think kind of people have seen the evolution of the web as follows. You start with web 1.0, mm-hmm. things used to be very static.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that you would read a fixed link, a fixed article on a link, content would not change dramatically. No, that's it. Mm-hmm. One person writes it, that's it. Now, apparently, according to some, we're living in what is called web 2.
Mm-hmm.
And what is web 2? Web 2 is kind of this thing where there is a platform that allows you as a user to provide content.
Yes.
Now, most of the content we read, like Wikipedia, is user provided.
Yes,
that's Web 2. Web 3 would like to even take that to another angle that allows you to actually get direct reimbursement, for instance, without having to enter any credit cards, having seamless authentication, for instance, mm-hmm. without mm-hmm. you having to enter passwords all the time. Not relying on a central Wikipedia for this.
Yes.
We have single sign-on with Google or Facebook. Mm-hmm. Some people don't like this because, again, you depend on a single vendor.
Yes.
How can you do this in a completely decentralized aspect? So kind of improving, in my way,
mm-hmm.
my understanding, improving Web 2 towards a version that is purely digital,
mm-hmm.
very little interactive, kind of that requires even no brain thinking from user side. Whether this can ever be achieved or not, that's another story.
Yeah, that's interesting to think about how you would do that practically. So how would you be recognized as the you that you are, and then in terms of security, like authentication and stuff? Yeah.
Right. Now there's the metaverse that adds to the thing because you can have a digital looking thing that represents you. How do you tie the digital thing to the physical object? There are lots of dimensions of the problem. I cannot... I think we're at a stage where there's still so much hype on the topic. It's very hard to distinguish reality from hype, no? But there are lots of startups, lots of funding on this. So let's see how it develops.
Yeah, interesting. You also mentioned the beauty of being in Bochum, like for this, you know, interdisciplinary research opportunity. Was that the reason you came here, or what made you decide to come?
Yeah, absolutely.
Come here.
Kind of, I think kind of in Europe, if you really want to be part of an excellent research environment, no, that's top ranked, I think you have really few alternatives to mm-hmm. Bochum, truly. I think kind of Bochum stands out. In my view, it's one of the best in research. And I would say in research in the entire field of security. Security is not only decentralized security. Security is not only passwords and hacking and whatever. Security is goes all the way from foundational security, kind of cryptography, cryptanalysis, all the way to hardware security, system security, software security, platform security, user security, human aspects of security, then societal aspects of security, regulations of security, and all mm-hmm. of this spectrum. I think there is no other alternative currently in Europe where you have an entire set of researchers tackling holistically this set of topics. Mm-hmm. I think here kind of people are absolutely competent in each of their own areas, but at the same time, super open mm-hmm. to collaborate cross-disciplinary and to kind of try to have impact on other in other areas. And that's something that you cannot beat currently in Europe.
Yeah, what a praise. I think Bochum will probably write this onto, you know, their new advertisement page.
Yeah, right? I mean, I think this would still be modest, to be honest.
Yeah. Okay. And but also personally, do you feel well here?
Yeah, I feel quite good. I've been here for 2 years and a half now. No? Okay. Time flies. it's such a pleasant environment to be. Colleagues are super nice. It's really kind of an ecosystem geared for excellence. I really don't regret my decision to move here. I also don't think there are other places that can compete with Bochum at the moment, to be honest.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, if you had a magic wand right now, if I gave you one, and you could decide on something, you know, a problem or something that you would like to have solved in your research immediately right now, what would it be?
Oh, wow. Can I award myself some money?
Yeah. You can do anything with that one.
So. No. I mean, I think if I had a wand, what I would do is I would like to have a perfectly secure technology that can ensure what we call agreement in a distributed setting. So kind of different nodes agreeing on information super fast.
Okay.
So this is very hard to achieve. It's very hard. We call it kind of the trilemma. It's very hard to have a protocol that scales, that's super fast, and that's super secure.
Okay.
You can do maybe any two of these three, okay. But not the three together.
Okay. It's like a holy grail that you will have to dig for.
That would be a good one.
That would be a good one. Yeah. Okay. Well, but maybe since Bochum is so unbeatable, maybe they can make it happen. Maybe all of you can make it happen
together
interdisciplinary research. Yeah. Well, I think that's a nice note and a nice hope to make a full stop over here. Thank you very much for these very, very interesting insights and this very interesting talk. Before I let you go, though, I have to ask you, because we ask all of our experts, for your favorite tip and a take-home message, so to say, something that they can actually employ to be more secure online in the cyber world. So what's your top tip security-wise?
Besides choosing a proper password and
Yes. Well, I have to say the password manager is out. Everybody says it.
Okay.
So you have to find something else.
So you're making my job a bit more difficult.
Yes.
No, I mean, I think kind of one thing to do is check the domain that they are accessing. Double checking that they are accessing the actual service provider they want before entering any information. Mm-hmm. If they are in a non-ideal situation, if they are stressed, if they are super busy, if their kids are shouting, probably it's not a good time to go online in their e-banking application. Yes. There's no urgency then. Don't be like me. No, not really. I mean, I think sometimes it's good to do security critical tasks like entering your banking application in a good moment for you, not doing it hastily and in an unfocused setting.
Okay.
I think that's a good tip.
So keep calm before you do anything online. Yeah. And keep calm and stay secure. Maybe
right.
That's the takeaway message for you. Thank you very much for being here. It was a pleasure. It was
likewise.
Great. Thank
Thanks
you.
So much for having me. I really enjoyed it. Thanks so much.
Thanks. I think we enjoyed it very much too. And I will get back to you, our the lovely listeners, very, very soon here on Nachgehackt.
That was the English edition of Nachgehackt. I hope you learned as much about cybersecurity as I did today. Don't forget to subscribe, and if you like our podcast, feel free to leave us some stars. Until next time, and stay secure. Nachgehackt is produced by Cube 5 and the Cluster of Excellence CASA at the Horst Goertz Institute for IT Security. Many thanks for the support to FISAC, Bochum Economic Development, and Eurobits.